J.E. Skeets, NBA TV's The Starters, joins us on the line right now. Hey, J.E., is it at your actual birthday, or did I play myself because I didn't know what happened to the Grammys yesterday?
Yeah, I learned a valuable lesson last night that if you're going to tweet happy birthday to me, make sure you put it in quotations and give that credit to Diana Ross.
Okay.
Because I'm getting a lot of birthday wishes today, even though my birthday is not until August 20th. But hey, thanks, man.
Yeah, but that's pretty sweet, though, that you basically got two birthdays.
Yeah. That's nice.
Yeah, I'm actually thinking of just straight up celebrating it.
You might as well.
Diana Ross like has a birthday to me at the end of her medley, and her birthday isn't until March 25th. So I don't think it matters anymore when your actual birthday is. You just have to say happy birthday to me, and that's when you celebrate it.
Listen, what's the downside here? Your friends buy you some free drinks, and you get to eat cake shame-free.
Yeah,
like, sounds good.
Nobody's asking for your ID. It's fine. Yeah.
That's exactly right. That's what I realized last night. I'm going to start saying it every day. Mm. And you feel good when you get the birthday wishes on Twitter. I had the Toronto Raptors official Twitter account saying happy birthday.
You know what this reminds me of? Do you remember when you were a kid and you figured out as you're starting to go to restaurants that if it was your birthday, they'd give you a free dessert?
Oh, yeah.
And so every time you'd go to a restaurant, you were like, why don't we just always tell them? Like, we should just
I had friends that thought it was funny to hear the waitresses and waiters sing to you, like embarrass you. So, yeah, I would go to restaurants.
Yeah, that was an element as you got a little bit older. I'm talking about when you were like 11 or 12 and dessert was still the most important thing in your life.
Yeah,
you were like, why are we not scamming this every single time? It's free dessert. Like, what are we doing here? Let's get it done. That's essentially you now. You're getting to relive that.
That's exactly right. And I totally remember, like you were just saying there, when you got into like the high school years and you were going out with like group dinners with your friends. And yeah, it felt like every time you went to one of those meals, some wise ass in your group was saying it was so-and-so's birthday, even though it wasn't just so you got free breadsticks and got a little thong. Yeah.
The poor people who worked at the restaurant
and they knew exactly what was happening.
Yeah, just you see a group of 15-year-olds come in, you're like, ah, damn it, we're gonna have to sing the song, and they're not gonna leave a good tip.
Oh yeah,
like that's terrifying.
Yeah, for sure, and you know it was company policy that they couldn't actually check and look at your ID. They're like, yep, they say it's their birthday.
Sing the song. They're like, oh, all right, fine, I'll do it. So we just briefly touched on Marc Gasol as we were starting. I watched your guys' reaction on The Starters, but has anything changed from your initial reaction to Gasol coming into Toronto to now? I know it's been a very limited amount of minutes, but I was kind of saying to Ben, just seeing him with this team, it kind of raises a level of excitement.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you're right. It's against the Knicks, and I mean, we could team up and add two guys and probably beat the Knicks right now. They're that bad. But I think the biggest, takeaway for me from that 20 minutes or so that Mark got in there was, oh yeah, now we have another playmaker on this team. We can actually run more things through another guy. And it doesn't just have to be, either Kyle creating for other guys or Kawhi doing his ISO stuff. We can go through Marc Gasol and try and run some things off of him. And he would have had a lot more assists if a couple of those shots go down, if Norm hit a couple more and stuff like that. So yeah, that was the biggest takeaway. I mean, it was sort of a no-brainer trade at the time for me, just because of what Masai Ujiri and the Raptors gave to the Grizzlies. I'm a big JV fan. I think Wright will be a good player for a long time. CJ had a rough year, hit the three ball, but that's no pick, no Siakam, no OG or stuff like that. That's a pretty good deal to upgrade your center position there in your big position, and a guy that just has more talent than a JV, or just has a different skill set, obviously, than JV. So, yeah, I loved it at the time. And again, from the 20 minutes against the Knicks and MSG, pretty excited for what Nick Nurse can try and figure out here with terms of lineups and so on.
No, I'm absolutely with you, and that's it. Playmaker, right, is that he steps in right away, and after maybe Kyle Lowry, he's their best passer on the team. He might even be better than Lowry. But yeah, you just see him catch the ball there in the high post and he surveys, right? Like he holds on to the ball and he's looking for teammates first. And maybe there's going to be a point in time where he's more aggressive with his offense as he gets more acclimated with the team. But it's part of why I think he's going to phase in naturally is that their guys are going to like playing with him. Everyone likes a big man that tries to open up shots for other people and is actively trying to get them the ball. And I think it's going to work. And we got those few minutes with the Starters at the end of the game before Serge Ibaka came in for the final 5 minutes. But it does kind of feel like with the way that the Raptors offense has stagnated at times late in games, that that is going to be a role he's going to play in. Don't you get the sense that he will eventually close with this team on most nights?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's exactly right. And Coach Nurse is still, you know, he's being a little coy in terms of, like, are we going to start Mark? Are we going to continue to start Serge? And he talked up Serge and the great season that he's had and how he's deserving of it. I get that. But I do think he'll not only, you know, continue with the sort of platoon, as we're calling it, starting center, depending on the matchup with Mark and Serge. But you're going to see Gasol end games just because his basketball IQ is through the roof. He's the best passing big man outside of Joker, I still think, in the league. And he lives at the elbow. And Serge has been money at the elbow, and the pick-and-pop game between Kyle and Serge has been great all year. But Gasol lives there at the elbow, and he can operate from there in terms of finding cutters and still having, you know, you still have to respect his shot, and he can even back that up to the three-point line. Absolutely, he's going to be an answer, at least, to hopefully prevent too much sort of classic Raptors, be it with it DeRozan when we had him, or now, you know, a little bit with Kawhi, where it's just ISO, go to work, beat your man, and we'll just stand here and watch and hope for the best. There should be, because you have a second playmaker, more movement and just more plays run that hopefully result in a better look than maybe an ISO opportunity gives you.
Yeah, it's easy to see how the ball could stagnate before Marc Gasol, but yeah, he should free up the offense a little bit. Talking to J.E. Skeets, co-host of NBA TV's The Starters, and you can tune into a special 90-minute edition of The Starters, telecast on location from NBA All-Star 2019 in Charlotte and featuring guest appearances and more Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern on NBA TV. So we mentioned that it seems pretty clear the direction that the lineup is headed, that whether he starts with the other four guys or not, that he's going to be part of the closing unit. But what do you think of Nick Nurse's job overall this season? He's had some, you know, some stuff thrown his way as far as injuries and load management, but what have you thought of the way he has managed this team and the rotations and the starting lineup?
Yeah, I've been, you know, fairly impressed. It's such a tough position, I think, for any coach to come in and take over a coach of the year, a guy that has a very good team, and expectations are high. And I think most of us thought the Raptors should be still, despite the coaching change and bringing in Kawhi for DeRozan, one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. So the expectations are there, and we're seeing with the Celtics how they're suffering and not meeting their expectations so far through the year. So yeah, he's done a good job. I like that he's tried different things. I thought he really got Serge and JV to buy in to the platoon center starting position of who's going to get the certain starts on some nights and who's not against particular matchups. So yeah, I think he's done a great job. I almost oddly like it now that the Raptors, in losing a little bit of their depth in this trade, maybe helps them, oddly enough, come playoff time, you know, outside of any injuries to some of these key players. But now he's like, there's just less guys to pick from here. You sort of know you're 9 or 10 guys here, and that'll get even shorter in the playoffs, I'm sure. And that's what we're going with, and let's figure it out from here in terms of who's starting and then who's closing and in between our lineups. I think he's done a pretty admirable job, and, you know, there hasn't really been, you know, outside of maybe a continuing sort of cranky Kyle Lowry at times, there hasn't been a whole lot of, you know, headlines coming from the Raptors, even considering Kawhi with the, you know, sitting there early in the year. It's been a pretty fairly quiet season, at least in my regards down here in Atlanta, compared to a bunch of other teams. So it's, you know, he's got a steady ship going there right now.
I love that point about the tightening up the depth because, yeah, man, the Raptors are 9 deep now.
Took away his toys.
Yeah, they have a playoff rotation, and I think that now it's not, yeah, everyone's so interested in the buyout market, and I get it because at first there were guys like Wesley Matthews and who else?
Wayne Ellington
was out there, and you thought, okay, you can get another 3-point specialist, and it's something that the team has lacked. But as of right now, you've seen some progress from Norm Powell, and I think a big reason for his drop off in the past was that he struggled with confidence. He fell out of the rotation. He was always forcing it. Now his role is more defined. And I think Fred VanVleet gets back to being one of the more important cogs on this team. And it's going to be important for those two guys to be their depth players, much more so than whatever they decide to add in the buyout market, whether it be a Ben McLemore or somebody else coming down the line, is that, yeah, everyone's roles are very defined with the slight risk of upsetting your center rotation. And we'll see what ends up happening actually with the distribution of minutes with Gasol and Serge. But no, I love that point. So speaking of that dysfunction, though, has that made you feel more confident about the Raptors' odds this season, looking at what's happening with the Celtics. The Sixers feel a little bit more stabilized now, but Boston just, you see the comments from Morris, I think it was yesterday that those came out.
Yeah, 26-point
lead. And it's hard to be confident that that's going to be a dangerous team in the playoffs if things start to go wrong for them.
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that. They just seem to dislike each other in that Celtics locker room. I don't know, like, where the line is drawn. Is it vets and young guys, or is it a mixture of the two? Is it people not, loving or trusting Kyrie because he sort of once committed long-term to the Celtics and then sort of went back on that? I don't know. The thing is, though, the Celtics are still so talented that they rip off these 10 out of 11 wins, and then they have some – weird story that makes all the headlines, and they have a team meeting, and then they come back, and then they win 10 out of 11. Like, they've gone on, like, these three distinct, really solid runs that have been broken up by these weird situations where guys are, through the media, sort of calling each other out. And then now we're in our latest one here after the frustration. Let's be honest, the frustration of losing an 18-point lead against the Lakers, following that up by losing a 28-point lead against the Clippers over the weekend. Kyrie tweaks his knee. He's day-to-day. But then Marcus comes out and says all this stuff. They don't seem to like each other, though. There's something to that. And that you would expect to have some impact on maybe your playoff success because they're not, reaching these expectations. They still scare me, though, because they're that talented of team. And the second round of the Eastern Conference is just going to be a bloodbath between these four teams. And even the Pacers and the Nets, to some extent, are pretty scrappy squads. But those four upper echelon teams in the East, I mean, two of those teams are going to lose in the second round, and that's going to be devastating. Like, all four of those teams, and I'm obviously talking Raps, Bucks, Celtics, and the Sixers, they all expect to go to the conference finals, if not the finals. So two teams are going to be very, very disappointed. But if I'm sort of putting them in order right now, yeah, I've got the Celtics a little bit lower than some of those other teams just because of all this, these headlines of these guys not really going to bat for each other, not really enjoying playing with each other by the sounds of it. So, yeah, it's a weird situation there, but they are still obviously such a talented team when they've got all their horses going. So not an easy out by any means, no matter what's going on with that squad.
I know you just said the Pacers and the Nets are scrappy, but would you not love the season to end today the way the Eastern Conference is currently constructed? You're 2, Bucks are 1, but the Sixers and Celtics are 4-5. So they meet in the first round, and in the second round you get to avoid the Bucks, Sixers, and Celtics. You get winner of the Pacers-Nets series. That seems – I know they're plucky, and yeah, maybe I'll have a different story tomorrow after the Raptors face off against the Nets tonight at Scotiabank Arena. But this seems like ideal if the season ended just like this.
Yeah, it seems ideal, and which means it won't be like this for Raptors fans at the end of the year because it's too ideal. You're right. And I don't think the Nets are going to win a first-round series. I think they will surprise whoever they play. And, again, they're going to be the classic nothing-to-lose type of team, and D'Angelo Russell gets hot here or there for a couple games. You might win one or two. They're going to put up a fight. They are. They're a well-coached and a young, energetic team that would be pumped, of course, to just be in a playoff series and play in front of their fans for a couple of games. But you're 100% right. I mean, right now, the way it is as a Raptors fan, this is exactly how you would want it to end. But there's still, what do we got, 25 games to go here. I'm sure it'll change a couple of times before, mid-April.
So Anthony Davis now wants to play, and the league is essentially going to force the Pelicans' hand because if they sit him, it's going to be $100K per game that he sits. And I don't think that's going to be something that the Benson family is too interested in doing, considering I think they're among the – they've got – maybe they're not the lowest, but they've got to be among the league's lowest in attendance and revenue. And it seems like nobody's happy in the NBA except for – I don't know, maybe not even the Warriors, like a couple of players. Like, are there a couple of guys that are happy in this league?
No.
Everyone just seems so upset. And we enjoy player movement, and it really helps people like us who talk about the league all the time. It always gives us something to talk about. But do you feel like this story in particular and the way that Kevin Durant is playing out potentially are actually going to make it reach a boiling point this offseason where the league is going to congregate and say, we've got to figure out a solution to this?
I think it's possible. I mean, with the Anthony Davis situation, I was saying for the last 10 days on the Spurs that I thought this play, this final play by Rich Paul, AD's agent, Clutch Sports, the final play of, hey, Anthony Davis was injured. He had the hand injury, but now he's good to go and he's going to play. this was their final play to force the Pelicans to trade him. And I always thought it was the if and obviously their goal was to get him out of New Orleans and, you know, to the Lakers to pair up with LeBron. This was their goal. There's no secret to that. It was a power play, though, because I knew this was going to be an issue if they were saying, hey, we are going, he's going to be playing if you don't trade him. And now here we are. And this is exactly what's happening. And the league, before we even got to the deadline, was reportedly saying, hey, if he's on your team, you're going to have to play him because we have these anti-tanking sort of rules that are subjective and loosely slapped on teams. Like, why don't we do this with Carmelo with the Rockets? And why aren't we doing this with Chandler Parsons and the Grizzlies and JR with the Cavs? Well, the truth is those guys are nowhere near Anthony Davis, and you can make the argument playing those other three guys, you don't want to because they're not that great of players. So, and there's no argument with that with Anthony Davis. If he's healthy, he's healthy. He should be playing. But it is a weird time here for the NBA because and I think I've seen Bill Simmons tweeting about it today, and I've heard him talk about it. It feels like you're reaching a weird little tipping point between it almost maybe going too far of becoming a players' league and the power and influence they have, and that we've almost tipped too far that side where we used to be too far the other, where it was, you know, the owners calling the shots and dictating whatever happened. It was always going to be a tricky situation here with AD, but I also, if they're going to have these rules that, hey, you can't just you just can't tank and sit guys that are healthy, then you have to have some sort of punishment in play, and that obviously would be in terms of finding a team for not. But it's gross, it's ugly, and I guess I'm not that surprised. I knew this was going to be the play, and that's why I actually thought he was going to be traded. Yeah. I thought he was because I thought the Pelicans were going to want to avoid this mess. Now, again, I think it's smart that they did wait because they're going to hopefully wait for a better Celtics package, maybe the number one pick, whoever gets that, and to try and resign and all that. But this was always going to be an issue. Like, if you have him after Thursday at 3 p.m., you got to play him. And how's that going to look? Well, what happened? They booed him. They booed him in New Orleans in his first game. So they he asked for the trade, and then he told them, well, if you don't trade me, I'm going to play. And like, it was just always going to be messy. And that was a long-winded way of saying, I don't know what the answer is, but I understand why the league is saying you got to play these guys that are, you know, the best guys in the world, what people come out to see, or we got to fine you. It's a weird situation.
Well, yeah, not only is it the optics, it's the fact that now you have a better chance of winning every night, which is not ideal. Not exactly what the Pelicans are looking for when they're trying to get Zion.
What drives me nuts, too, is that now that the Pelicans fans have booed him, he's like, I was justified to do this.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I knew.
No, yeah, they were booing the hell out of you before you requested
that. I knew
out of
you
town.
Didn't care about me. That's what KD did when he left for OKC and he came back. He's like, aha.
Not quite. All right. So we got a would you rather here, JE, that we've been thinking about because I know it's a little dysfunctional in the East, at least with the Celtics right now. But those teams are stacked, those four teams. Would you rather the Raptors had to go through this year's Eastern Conference and those teams in the Bucks and the Sixers and the Celtics is currently constructed, or you get in the Wayback Machine and you grab LeBron James' weak Cleveland Cavaliers team that had to go through a couple of seven-game series and won against the Celtics without Kyrie Irving? I know they swept the Raptors. But, yeah, you get that Cavs team against this year's Raptors team. What would you rather do, this year's East or last year's Cavs?
Oh, my God, that's a good one. Wow. I'll take LeBron and his Cavs team. I will. I mean, I have flashbacks. I wake up in the middle of the night, game one of last year's series against the Cavs, where it felt like the Raptors had six or seven chances to win that game at the end. Mm-hmm. And how different that series definitely goes and is, and maybe the outcome even for the Raps and their fans of moving finally past LeBron. So yeah, that is a good one. I'm scared of the Bucks. I'll be honest. They're the real deal. So I will go LeBron and his weird Cavs team, even though that sounds crazy saying out loud as well.
No, that's the intellectually correct response. The only way you would choose The other way is if you're just like scared of the boogeyman for no reason.
Well, I mean, not no reason, but non-quantifiable
reasons.
Well, how do you think the rest of the West feels if LeBron and the Lakers grab that 7 seed?
Seriously.
And then they play the Denver Nuggets. You think Nuggets fans are like, fine, spread your nuggets. Like, no, they're going to be terrified. They're going to be like, oh God, LeBron's coming here. And they're going to realize what all those good Eastern Conference teams felt. My only thing is, yes, you're right. The logical move is to take the one series against that Cavaliers team over half to go through the gauntlet that is the East this year. It's just that if you had to make that decision publicly, if it was up to you, and then the Raptors lost to LeBron, you have to move. You have to change your identity. You have to leave. You can never be heard from again. You got to seek asylum because, Raptors fans are going to be like, what were you thinking? Why did you put us up against LeBron again? They named the city after him. Like, it's over.
Yeah, that's right. LeBronto. That's exactly right. That's true. And actually, now that you said that out loud, you're right. I think all Raptors fans or teams or fans of other Eastern Conference teams, elite teams over the last couple of years, they actually want the Lakers to get into the playoffs, you're not going to beat the Warriors, so you got to be the seventh seed or higher. And then, take care of this unbelievable Nuggets team. Go through the next team and get to the conference finals. Like, I think we would all want that as Raptors fans because we'd be like, aha, see? Yeah. It wasn't just us, caving under the pressure. It's just LeBron does this time and time again, and we feel a little vindicated. Yeah, I think that's a good call.
I love that. Yes, I need that schadenfreude. Always appreciate the time. Thanks for taking it for us.
Thanks, man.
Guys, take care, and thanks for celebrating my birthday with me today.
Yeah, you're welcome. Happy birthday. It's
Enjoy
my actual birthday tomorrow. No big deal.